Hello, everyone. This is Peter Granich, reminding all listeners this is being done primarily to benefit clients of an alternative to traditional financial planning group that I've been honored to be part of since 1999. Others are welcome to listen, but should not rely on this or anything else of mine to be treated as investment advice. Clients are reminded to address anything I discuss here with my partner Dave and his team at your convenience. These thoughts of mine are not concerned about the next day, week, or even month or two, but about what most have long ago tossed aside as proper long-term thinking, using years as the target time frame. For the small minority left to do, please consider the following. So several weeks now, I've spoken about the legit possibility of the Dow Jones Industrial Average going above 50,000 before any real chance of a major top occurring. This past Friday, after a most interesting week in many different financial markets, such an event occurred. And as expected, the Don't Worry, Be Happy crowd, and of course the financial media tied to the hips, made the most of it. No one lives and breathes more from this stock market rise and falls than the president. He treats it as a scorecard to his overall policies and resorts to twisting facts or stating untruths to create a false perception. Please, no knock on him. Both sides of the aisle do that daily. President Trump says exporters are paying his tariffs, but several recent studies show the U.S. companies and consumers are footing the bill. President Trump has repeatedly argued that foreign exporters will pay his tariffs for the privilege of doing business in America. He went further last month in an editorial published by the Wall Street Journal, claiming foreign companies were paying at least 80% of the tariff costs. He even linked a study from the Harvard Business School to validate his claim. So what's the problem, you ask? The study Trump linked made no such claim. In fact, the researchers arrived at the opposite conclusion. That report stated, "Our results suggest that the U.S. consumers pay up to 43% of the tariff burden, with the rest absorbed by U.S. firms," end quote. Those results roughly align with research from other institutions. Goldman Sachs economists report that U.S. companies and consumers collectively paid 84% of the tariffs in October 2025. And they estimate consumers alone will bear 67% of the burden by July 2026. Similarly, the Kyle Institute examined shipments totaling $4 trillion between January 2024 and November 2025, and the research concluded, and I quote, "Foreign exporters absorbed only about 4% of the tariff burden. The other 96% is passed along to U.S. importers and consumers," end quote. Trump's tariffs are effectively a tax on consumption, which means they reduce buying power for consumers and raise import costs for businesses. That's a problem because consumer spending and businesses' investment accounts for approximately 85% of GDP. By siphoning money away from consumers and businesses, tariffs threaten to slow economic growth. But at the peak of major bull runs, reality and truth get tossed aside as many believe this time it's different or at least don't want to be a party pooper. I have stated Trump's tying himself to the stock market also comes from the fact that the 10% wealthiest Americans own 86% of all the assets. The next 40% own the remaining 14%, and the bottom 50% own little or nothing. That top 10% who's truly benefiting from a rising stock market and is also who Wall Street primarily caters to. If the market peaks and heads lower, Trump realizes a critical group that either supports him or at least doesn't try to tear him down could be lost. While it is an extremely powerful group, those 10%ers are seeing most Americans either going in the opposite direction of them or an ever-increasing challenge to hold their ground. He's already seen the once totally supported MAGNA group and crypto groups start to question his support of them or even pull away from him. I believe it's fair to say that Trump has bet the ranch on the stock market and do what he can to keep it up. Unfortunately, the factors working against that continue to grow, and while not yet at the point of taking it down, they continue to demonstrate it's now a question of when, not if. At the peak of the mother of all bubbles, even when some of the individual bubbles are already popping like AI, software plays, and the mother of all hypes, crypto, all reliable indicators are tossed aside on the belief this time it's different. One that has stood the test of time but is totally ignored by the Don't Worry, Be Happy crowd now that makes up most of the financial service industry is the CAPE ratio. The S&P 500 recorded an average cyclical adjusted price-to-earnings CAPE ratio of 39.9 in January, making the fourth consecutive month reading above 39. Prior to that, the S&P 500 last recorded a monthly CAPE ratio over 39 during the dot-com crash in October 2000. The CAPE ratio is used to determine whether either entire stock market indexes are overvalued and multiples above 39 have historically correlated with dismal future returns. After recording a CAPE ratio of above 39, the S&P return has averaged zero during the next 6 months, but the index declined by an average 4% in the next year and declined an average 20% in the next 2 years. Now, when I'm asked why it hasn't already topped out, I believe the two biggest reasons are as follows. You've heard me discuss it enough, and I'll again put information along with this blog post about passive investing. I don't need to explain it again, but as long as the positivities flow into the passive investing funds, it's difficult for the stock market to turn down. But if and when it does, it'll be as ugly, if not uglier, on the downside, because things go down much faster than they go up. The second is professional advisors and the investment community and investors themselves. Over two-thirds of financial advisors have only been in the business since the year 2000. Most of them weren't either born or in diapers when I started in this business. They have grown up, no fault of their own, through a one-way street driving. They put the pedal to the metal and they go forward. And the odd time something bad happened, the Fed came along, threw a lot of money out on the road, towed away the problem, and off they went again. Unfortunately, most of these same people could be tossed off the top of the Empire State Building right now, and they would all say the same thing all the way down. Hey, so far, so good. I want to urge you to take the time and watch the following videos multiple times if that's what it takes for you to fully absorb what they're stating. These are among some of the prime reasons I'm the most bearish ever if one can look past one's nose. Given how well I have done overall now for several years, I hope you strongly consider the following. Capital preservation over capital appreciation. That doesn't mean no exposure to growth, but ideally, equity index annuities and or ETFs that mimic them, whereupon you share in any upside but limit or eliminate any downside risk, is to me the best of all worlds given what we're facing now. Worst case, one doesn't share in all the gains. Best case, one doesn't lose any principal while others' lives are dramatically changed for the worse due to their losses. Living a less is more lifestyle while the world burns the candle on both ends and darkness they never thought possible is awaiting them is what 42 years in and around the financial arena has led me to this point. Either way, I can stand before my maker and say I did what was best for the client and not me. Not everyone in my business will be able to say that. Peace be with you.